RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Sam Troth is a survivor of abuse in state care. He uses his social media platform, The Road to Healing Aotearoa, to raise awareness about New Zealand's sexual abuse statistics and to advocate for survivors of abuse. And we've got Sam on. We've invited him on to RCR to talk about the recent government apology to those who suffered abuse in state care between 1950 and 1999. And Sam, welcome to our show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on, Paul. It's a pleasure.
Okay, it's a dark time in our history, that period.
Wasn't it? Absolutely.
And maybe it's even before that, but I don't know. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a huge stain, and it didn't stop in 1999, obviously, but this is the period we're looking at, as you said, a 50-year period wrapping up December 99. Over 200,000 victims of the state, and when you do the maths on that, it's quite horrific. They were abusing people or children at a rate of 11 per day to reach that number of 200,000.
Wow.
Yeah, for 50 years solid.
Yeah.
It's almost incomprehensible, you know.
Yeah, state care. Something wrong with the care bit of that. Okay, so I remember flatting with a woman in Palmerston North in 1981, and she told me about her experience of being in Lake Alice. She was put in Lake Alice because she was a rebellious teenager, and I can just imagine the scenario and repeat it in big numbers, as you've mentioned, but, you know, a lot of cases will be different. But anyway, it's the one I know about. And she was rebellious, went to the GP. The GP sort of sat back in the chair with the pipe, said, oh, well, you know, obviously got a psychological problem. She was probably lucky she avoided a lobotomy or something even at that point, because she got shock treatment later. He committed her to Lake Alice. The parents thought, well, okay, that's a solution, because they trusted the doctor. In she went. Life was hell for her. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to even repeat what I know.
Yeah, some of the stories that have come out of the commission are just, especially the psychiatric care, just anything. And you can't imagine the horrors. It's horrific, man.
Well, it's like kind of going into hell.
Exactly that. You know, I mean, we're talking, you know, the stories I've heard and read testimonies of people being taken from the care facilities to other locations and then being used for sexual gratification by multiple, you know, men, and then taken back, you know, and this is that's sex trafficking. So this is sex trafficking of the state. It's just, the encounters. I mean, me personally, I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. And that was through, before my time in state care, that was through a associate of my father, a work colleague of my father. I wouldn't call him a work, a friend, obviously. And then because of my behavior, obviously I was very angry, very confused, very rebellious young man. I went into the boys' homes real quick. I was very violent. And I was met with violence by the staff. You know, I was put in cell confinement in Epuni Boys' Home, which was terrible for sexual abuse in the 70s, 80s. I was there in the late 90s, and I was put into cell confinement for 9 days. You know, and then you get put back out into the gym, and then it's Lord of the Flies kind of stuff. You know, the other residents, the other boys, they've already been given their orders by the staff, and you're put, the pecking order is sorted real quick, you know, and it's terrifying, you know. The amount of abuse and the lack of accountability is shocking.
Do you think just working, because I'm thinking of the workers here, they're hired to do a job and it doesn't include all that.
No.
Do they desensitize, or is a role like that attractive to a certain personality?
Absolutely, that role. First and foremost, they do desensitize. You know, it's a bit like if you're a chippy and you start with a building crew and your parents never swore and you didn't hear too much, you didn't have older brothers. After a month on a building site, you're swearing like a sailor, and there's pretty much nothing that you'll hear that will offend you or upset you. you're desensitized much the same in those environments, I would imagine. And that culture of harming, you know, that was, that's, I mean, over 50 years that was bred into the very seams of their workplace. And then, yeah, absolutely. I mean, where else better to work if you're a sexual predator? Where else better to work if you've got anger issues and you like to be violent and you like to, you know, enforce that? You know, where else better to work if you've got your own issues and you don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with them?
Take them out on teenagers in this case.
Take them out on teenagers, children. The abuse that happened to our disabled community is disgusting as well.
Explain that. When you say disabled, what, physically disabled community?
Yes, our physically disabled communities. You're blind, you're deaf. You know, people that were born with, I guess, I'm not too familiar with the different, you know, the different ailments, but, you know, like multiple sclerosis or people that are wheelchair ridden or, you know, all of these things, they were taken advantage of in a huge way.
I mean, these
were people that couldn't verbalize, you know, your nonverbal autistic children, things like that. These people couldn't verbalize what was happening to them on a good day, so let alone be able to verbalize the abuse they were encountering.
It all makes me mad, but boy, that boils my blood to think of that. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's horrific. You know, we attended the apology at one of the locations because they had us well and truly split up. But
You said well and truly split up.
Yeah, so... You know, instead of my original thoughts when I went to Parliament in July and was in the gallery for the tabling of the Royal Commission, my initial thoughts when they set this date for the apology last week, you know, the 12th of November, my initial thoughts were, okay, cool. Will it be on the lawn of Parliament? Because there's going to be a lot more people that are going to want to attend. And then, no, we had to enter a ballot to see if you could be in the gallery, or a ballot to see if you could be in the overflow area for the galleries. And then there was other options. There was a marae in town in Wellington. Was Shed 6 in Wellington. There was two locations in Auckland, another location in Christchurch. And then a lot more locations popped up as well that were smaller viewings of the live stream. So we were well and truly separated, you know, but what was really cool, it was cool, was to see the difference that we had deaf people there, we had people that were in wheelchairs, we had gang members, we had little old ladies who were abused in Lake Alice and places of the same. We had all walks of life all coming together, you know, and it was a really good, it would have been nice if the people apologizing were looking at all of us in a big crowd like that, because they would have seen the widespread harm that they caused and all of the different sort of walks of life and you know, that affected.
A lot of the folk involved way back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s now, they'll all be gone, won't they, most of them?
A lot of them are, yes. There was I heard... And I can't, I'm not good with names, but apparently last time National were in government, there was the request to do this Royal Commission and a MP was on record as saying, just wait till they all die. They'll be dead soon. But a lot, and that was, he was speaking of the survivors. He was speaking about the complainants.
Yeah, I was more thinking about the perpetrators when I brought that up.
Yeah. So the perpetrators, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of them would be dead, but you know, I mean, I'm only 41. So, you know, these people would be, you know, these staff could be as young as 60, 60, 65.
Right, yep.
You know, but there's a lot of staff that are still alive and there's been zero arrests.
Why do you think, I think everybody knew stuff like that went on, and I told you I knew about it in 1980 firsthand. Mm. There was a sort of a cone of silence for a long time. Is that because everyone was all in?
I guess you got to think, you're also allowed, the teachers were allowed to smack us then, weren't they?
Yeah, you used to get the cane and that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, apart from the, I guess, you know, especially for the troubled youth, for the naughty boys, if you put me in that category, because that's what I was, that sort of physical violence and self-confinement and you know, sensory deprivation techniques would have all been seen as okay.
Yeah. You know? Sort of behavior management.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. BMR, behavioral management regime.
Okay. There you go. Wasn't far off. I'm just wondering, how does someone go from what you experience to, I mean, I'm listening to you, man. You sound like you know what you think and you're heading in a direction. You know, it's not like you're lost, though it sounds like you could have been at some point. How have you been able to put that back together? Just curious.
It's been a long road. I've been working on myself really hard for about the last 4 years. I had a big turning point, 2019. I was ready to end my life. I'm a father. I'm a father of four, and we also have three children that we've adopted between myself and my wife. You know, I'm a carpenter. I struggled through getting a trade. Up until I was 22, I was in and out of prison. I spent more time in prison and boys' homes between the ages of 13 and 22. I spent more time in than out. Just by sheer miracle, really, I pulled through. You know, I the amount of times that I was ready to tap out in my younger years, and I was also I'm also a recovering addict. So I was a methamphetamine addict for about 15 years. You know, so I'm here for. There's got to be a reason why I'm still around, and I honestly believe it's to be a voice for those people that don't have a voice. You know, and that's what I do through my social media platform. You know, try and inspire and sort of encourage others to step up and seek help. And yeah,
what is the best way for someone who feels? I know we're here to talk about the apology, but obviously, you know. You know, you think of things to find some, because everyone says just, you know, helps there, call out, sing out. But, you know, I might not want to tell anyone right now, or I don't know how to say it, or I'm so freaking angry that if I even talk about it, I might want to biff something right there. To kind of face it. What's the best way to approach that? Not that our audiences, maybe some of our audience needs that, but they might know people who need to know that.
Yeah, I mean, shit. You just need, if it's you, you know, you just need that one person. You've got to open up. You've got to get it off your chest, especially with the men. They don't talk about it at all, man, and it just eats us alive inside. Yeah. You know, you might not feel comfortable talking about it with your partner or you know, you might have a sister. Talk to it about you with your sister or your brother or, there's got to be someone, find someone, and just letting it out, especially for the first time, will feel amazing. And then that cliche, as you just said, everyone says there's help. But there is help. There is support. You can reach out to me and tell me where you're located, and I'll send you through a link to an organization that are genuine, that are going to help, and that are free.
The whole process of the inquiry and then the apology, are you satisfied that that was a truly genuine project to, I don't know, confront this once and for all? Because sometimes, I'm not saying there was any, you know, leveraging of it, but, you know, like you say, that comment about they'll be dead at a particular time and maybe we can go then. Are you satisfied by what's happened?
Nah, not at all. You know, if anything, got more riled up. You know, we've got, on one hand, you've got this guy apologizing, and his speech is literally a copy and paste from what he said in July. There were sentences that were exactly the same. I don't believe he wrote it himself. He didn't look me in the eyes. I was staring at a screen, and I was only 800 meters away from where he was delivering the speech.
So he should have fronted on the lawn. In
on
front
the
of
lawn.
10,000 people, if it came to that, without notes, screw the notes. And even if it's only a minute or two, because that's all he could think of, his words genuinely
would have been so much better. You know, and then that's that old saying as well, actions speak louder than words. So if you're apologizing to me on this one hand, But on the other hand, you've created boot camps in the last 12 months. You're creating all this division with allowing this bill to go through and creating all this kerfuffle in the community over the treaty. You know, you're wanting to revoke Section 7AA of the Oranga Tamariki Act for the child protection, which is, you know, that's just crazy, revoking that. You know, you've just passed legislation the other day that physical force can be used with children that are in care. Like, that's kind of like a rapist saying sorry while he's raping someone else, to me.
I hear you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was the general consensus across, and the event I attended, and we walked back and forth to Parliament a couple of times on the actual day, and we were at Parliament in the morning. There would have been upwards of 300 people there, and not one person was happy. Not one person was satisfied with what they heard or what they're seeing happen, you know, in the background.
What about some sort of compensation for damage? Is there any point in doing it? I mean, it could only be monetary and what something to put on the wall that says we're sorry. What are your ideas around that?
Yeah, no one's going to say no to money in this time times. How do you put a figure on it? That's a tough one. What I do know is that we've spent, it was over $190 million on this inquiry. That would have well and truly settled the people that had come forward. You know, there'd be money left over in the kitty. He spoke the other day of $38 million going towards settling the 3,500 private cases against the Ministry of Social Development that are in the private court at the moment. So that's people seeking compensation through a lawyer and going through the courts. There's 3,500 people doing that at the moment. He's allocated $38 million to wrap that up in the next 12 months. And most of that's going to go to lawyers.
Yeah, the lawyer industrial complex.
I mean, don't even get me started on all the new organizations.
Why couldn't you just say, okay, we'll give everyone 150K or something like that and just at least get the money out straight?
That would be fantastic. I mean, to be fair, it would have to be either, they would have to structure it really well and they would have to come up with a few categories because you've got sexual assault or rape, you've got physical abuse and torture, and then you've got the medical mistreatment and the Lake Alice sort of stuff. So, you know, and some people tick all three boxes.
Yeah, so maybe more compensation.
And how would they feel, you know, I only tick one box. How would they feel if I got the same payout? So, I mean, there's lots to think, but I think at the end of the day, you know, he's got to figure it out and figure it out quick. I know in Australia, it's about $100,000. That's what they're dishing out in Australia, and they've got it set out like that. So if you were physically tortured and physically abused, you might be eligible for $60,000, and if you were sexually abused, you get another $60,000 or you get another. But the average payout's $100,000 over there, and it's quick, you know. And there's organisations.
Well, we could easily emulate that system. Easily emulate that.
Well, I mean, everything else seems we're copying them. They had a Royal Commission, we had one. Their National Survivors Day is the 12th of November, and funnily enough, our apology was this year on the 12th of November. No doubt they're going to call the 12th of November Survivors Day like Australia have.
Yeah, so Survivors Day, yeah. Couple of other thoughts too. So church leaders were not legally obligated to engage or held responsible in that process, were they?
I wonder, not at all.
Maybe the answer's obvious, I don't know, but I wonder why.
Yeah, so do I, because they don't pay any tax, so you'd think you'd want to ring them out.
they're even supposed to be on an even better level of goodness.
Exactly, yeah. So it's real. They do. One thing I do know is that I've heard of people that have taken the churches to court have done very well out of their private settlement.
Well, they like to pay to not have too much of a fuss, mate, right?
That's right. So you get a payout and you get a non-disclosure order signed. And these people, and they are paying out well. But what they're not doing is standing up and saying sorry and taking accountability, and they are some of the biggest abusers in the bunch.
Again, you can kind of explain what about that particular area would attract predatory people.
Exactly, it's the same, isn't it?
But that's not to demonize everyone who chooses that life. I mean,
not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Not at all. I mean, So again, Luxon said the other day in his speech that he had sent emails to these church leaders reiterating and re-encouraging them to engage in this process. So here's an idea. Pass a piece of legislation. You could get it done. No one's going to object to it. Well, I know the majority of the House won't object to it. And hold them legally accountable. Go and kick
or,
in the door.
Or at least a phone call first, not an email, a personal phone call. Hi, it's the Prime Minister of New Zealand here. I'm going to take a few moments of your time. Here's what's going down. If you don't play ball, we go to the next level of the...
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it just feels like a big cop-out, you know, which is sad, you know. And the survivors that I've shared space with, their stories are horrific. They make mine look like a bloody, a Boy Scout camp. They make
and some mine would have died in through this abuse. Yep. Sorry to jump there, but
I even spoke with a woman. Her father had passed away in May, so he just missed this year. So he just
no,
missed
but
out.
I mean, died in the care. So
oh,
abused.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry to hear about the father, but yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of deaths from Lake Alice and the other psychiatric wards is out of control. And then, you know, the whole abortions after the rapes would have been a real big thing, especially in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. All right. Do you think there's enough awareness? Because there was a while back plenty of awareness of sexual assault and sexual abuse, but it seems to have. I mean, do we still talk about it like we used to, or have the awareness?
Nah, and that's really the problem. I mean, we've got the fourth worst statistics in the OECD, with 1 in 6 boys by the age of 16 and 1 in 6 1 in 3 girls by the age of 16.
Well,
now when we put that rate against our 2018 population, that's a rate of a girl every hour and a boy every other hour. To reach that number, 23% of our adult population have been sexually abused or assaulted in their lifetime. It's a real, real problem. And it's the last thing. You know, we're comfortable when we're talking about suicide. We're talking about addiction and recovery. What we're not talking about is sexual abuse. You know, it fools our, I think it's 73% of our female prison population have been sexually abused. I think it's 50-something% of our male prison population have been sexually abused. You know, and that's that old saying, hurt people hurt people. And I mean, I know they're sitting in jail for a reason. I certainly was as well. I deserved the time that I had to do because I was doing stupid shit. But at the end of the day, it's not an excuse, but it's definitely an explanation.
Yeah.
And if we can create that awareness before this is happening, create it in the homes, make it a culture, we could really get a handle on this mental health issue in New Zealand. Because with those numbers, you can't tell me that sexual abuse victims aren't the largest demographic in every other, you know, suicide, addiction, all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just looking at some stats here. Being abused or neglected as a child increased the likelihood of arrest as a juvenile by 59%, as an adult by 28%, and for a violent crime by 30%. Those aren't small numbers.
Mm. No, they're not. They're huge. They're majority numbers, not minority numbers, you know. I mean, as an adult, there's a study that came out of Aussie, and I like to reference the numbers out of that, and that is, as an adult, you're 10 times more likely to take your own life if you're a survivor of sexual abuse, and you're 12 times more likely to die of an intentional drug overdose.
Yeah. Okay, if people want to get in touch, Sam, what's the best way? Because there could be some who now want to get in touch, so let's tell them how they can do that.
Awesome. So I have the social media platform on both Instagram and Facebook, which is called The Road to Healing Aotearoa. I've also got a website up there as well, if you want to flick me through an email via the website. But otherwise, just you can send me a direct message on either of those platforms, and I'll respond to you timely.
Any final comments before we stop chatting, Sam? It's been really interesting, by the way. Thank you.
Nah, just thank you very much for taking the time. And also, I really appreciate the fact that you are willing to have these tough conversations on your channel, because a lot of the mainstream media don't want to engage in this. You know, I mean, I've walked the country.
I should have mentioned that. I'm sorry. Maybe quickly.
I mean, I walked the country. Wow. Lengthways, widthways. I just finished a cycle around the South Island, 2,000 kilometers, and I still haven't gotten into the mainstream media. I've been promised a slot on The Breakfast Show a couple of times, and I've been bounced. I've had a few radio interviews, but it's very, very hard. So I just want to say thank you very much for.
Oh no, look, a pleasure to. And we want to know. I mean, crikey, we want to know about this. You know, not just a little bit here and there. We want to actually know. So thank you for that. Before you go, Sam, I think next April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We're commenting on our awareness of that just before.
Yeah.
So what is planned? I know you're doing something, and how can people support you, man? Can you tell us?
So next April we will be walking from Cape Reinga to the Beehive. We'll be doing a petition requesting minimum mandatory sentences for sexual offenders and also the removal of character references. And we'll be walking that over the 30 days of April. And it'll be quite symbolic because statistically speaking, over a 30-day period, 1,060 children will be sexually abused in New Zealand. There's 30 days in April, and we will be walking 1,060 kilometres. So a kilometre for every child abused in that month, statistically speaking. And to support us along the way, all you got to do is just jump onto the Road to Healing Aotearoa on Facebook or Instagram. Give us a follow and just share the content if it's relevant to you. Otherwise, enjoy following along on our journey.
Okay. Thank you, Sam Troth. Maybe we'll talk again, Sam. Keep up the work.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.